Welcome to the Flow Tracer Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:35 p.m. that is Central Time, and today is August 11th. Well, BHP Billiton is taking a risk and going off and buying OZL or OZ Minerals, which is a almost entirely Australian-based copper provider. And what I thought was interesting is that they're not bidding more than the peak value. So maybe they've learned some of the lessons from previous cycles, not to pay the peak values, and the price is now right around where they've bid for it. Now, OZL's management have come back and said, "You've got to be kidding me, this isn't even close to what our business is worth." But of course, it is up from 5 to 25 in the space of 18 months. And that's a big move by any measure, but we're still well below where the peak values were in 2006 and 7, and yet copper prices are a lot closer to where they were back then. So they have at least something to base that contention on. Of course, BHP Billiton is looking at the future, and they're thinking, well, we know that there's going to be a lot of demand for copper because of the green initiative, the electrification of the global economy in service to decarbonization is going to rely heavily on copper. So that's the bull case. It's the challenge that all the mining companies are trying to work around. And there is a premium that existing mines have over potential mines, because potential mines have to overcome the cost, the time, and the regulatory hurdles that have been put in place. And those are not easy things to overcome. And particularly when it comes to copper, you often have to go off to some inclement environment and build a railway or a highway all the way to where or where the copper is, and then all the way out to the sea. And that's an expensive proposition, particularly when you talk about somewhere like the Democratic Republic of Congo. So an Australian-based miner that's already producing and has already overcome a lot of those obstacles, and the fact that it's in Australia, not Congo, is also obviously very attractive. That should command a premium. But of course, copper prices have experienced really quite a considerable pullback. And copper is rebounding from a deep oversold condition, and it was in positive territory again in here today. Now let's just think about the bearish case, and that has to be around China. So the renminbi was strong yesterday and then gave up some of the advance in here today, and the PBOC is talking about withdrawing liquidity from the market, potentially starting within the next month. And that does seem to be a rather odd statement when we consider that there's this huge strike going on among mortgage holders that are simply not paying because there's no building activity going on in the projects they've paid for. And you have the government now looking at inflation starting to rise, particularly led by food prices. So the PBOC is withdrawing liquidity in service to try and bring down food inflation. But of course, that's also going to have a knock-on effect for the property sector. And of course, property and infrastructure go hand in hand. So what's going to happen to China's copper demand, more importantly, demand growth, if they're going to continue to withdraw liquidity from the market? So that at least is perhaps what we might call a fly in the ointment for the copper sector. And it would suggest to me at least that what we're seeing right now in copper is a short covering rally, and that the price will eventually roll over again. Now, ultimately, China will have to start to promote more risk-taking behavior if they're going to save the property market. But there's no real sign of a low yet in the Shanghai Property Index. And a number of companies, most particularly China Vanke, have been trending downwards. The big challenge for the property sector is that these companies have been hand in glove with senior communist officials all over the country for decades. And there are major fortunes have been based upon the massive boom in property in China over the last 40 years. And a lot of that money has been hived away in trusts, and those trusts have then turned around and lent money to property ventures. So there's been a compounding effect that money made from property is reinvested in property and leveraged in property. So obviously these are problematic events when the government has decided that it is no longer in the national interest to support property prices. And that is the one thing that gives me pause about being really enthused about copper, despite the fact that it is rallying at present. Now, there's a lot of angst right now about UK electricity prices. And they are, and let's just put this on a line chart, it makes it look easier. The price is right in the region of the peak from back in early this year. And there is the real possibility that it is going to break on the upside. So there are a couple of different calendar items that are coming up. And most particularly, it's going to be around October for UK electricity prices, because they're going to jump higher and they're going to do it so in a big way. So that is going to massively affect the ability of consumers to pay their bills. And most consumers everywhere basically spend up to their, or they don't prioritize saving. They just spend up to how much money they have. So when you get a big surprise in an essential item, then the money has to come from somewhere. And, of course, this is going to be doubly problematic for small business owners. And there was a subscriber kindly sent through his personal experience in here today. I'm going to post it. But when a business is used to paying £20,000 a year and is then faced with the possibility of paying £60,000 to £70,000 a year, well, where's the extra £50,000 going to come from when consumers are already under pressure and they don't have the potential to absorb big price hikes? Well, it means that you're just going to be using less electricity. So it's either that you're going to have fewer consumers, you're going to have to cut hours, or the play area or the whatever the venture is will be colder in the winter and hotter in the summer. So that there will simply be a demand response. And of course, that is assuming that these types of businesses stay open at all. Now, these are really problematic effects because the vast majority of people tend to be employed by small businesses. And when small businesses go under, then it has a significant deleterious effect on local economies. So, faced with this challenge, and on top of that, you have significant strike action. So right now it's about railways, but it's then also about dock workers. And up and coming, we're going to have teachers and nurses. Now, these are all heavily unionized and in many respects, government employees. And they have negotiating power with the government because the country is at their mercy. Regular people whose jobs are most at risk and experience more volatility, then they don't have the same bargaining power, so they are under even more stress. So that's obviously going to create a lot of class struggle, as well as the real potential for significant economic stress. faced with that challenge, then the potential is that governments are going to turn around and introduce price controls. Now, price controls mess with the price setting environment and the market economy. And they would be anathema in a normal environment, but we're not in a normal environment. So usually when price controls are introduced, they're welcomed by consumers. And the one benefit that price controls have over wage increases is that they don't have to be permanent. And on top of that, then they're equally applicable to everyone in society. So they're more democratic than bowing to the demands of various strong union movements. So therefore, it is looking increasingly likely that that is what we're going to see potentially first in the UK and then elsewhere afterwards. Now, when we look at the 10-year yield, it is bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average. And this is still a really quite consistent uptrend. But the more important point is that the price has broken the long-term, or the, it's not a price, but a yield, has broken the long-term downtrend. So yields have been falling for decades, and there has never been an occasion where a move above the 1,000-day moving average has been sustained. But now we are really miles away from the 1,000-day moving average, and the 200-day moving average is offering support. So this is looking quite different to what we had back in 2007. But of course, the recessions haven't started yet. But it is worth reminding ourselves that yields had contracted significantly and were back below the 1,000-day moving average by the time we got into 2008, had a brief flurry of activity, and then seriously declined. So we're nowhere near that kind of condition yet, because this is still a consistent trend on the upside. And as long as it continues to bounce, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And this is at a condition that we're seeing everywhere. Government bond yields having rallied, our prices had rallied for about 2 months, are now starting to pull back again. The 10-year yield in Australia is bouncing from the 3% level, which is the upper side of the range that persisted between 2015 and 18. But let's look at more back history. Sometimes you really do have to look at more than a decade for some real perspective. So this is the biggest move on the upside we've seen in decades. And we're definitely seeing more of these kinds of questions being asked about just what's it going to take to get on top of inflation. The 10-year yield in the USA has been up in a dynamic manner for the last 2 weeks. It's bounced from the 2.5% level and the region of the 200-day moving average. And this hasn't been anything other than a reversion to the mean. Now, there was the potential that it could have been a failed upside break, but the size of the upward dynamic puts paid to that potential. So there is really now scope that if the price moves back through 3%, then it will have completed the base formation. And again, we need to look at lots of back history to really highlight how long that base formation is. We're talking about a decade and a failed break, and then a resounding rush to break out on the upside and a consolidation. And again, this has, it's not been nearly as consistent as we, as the trend we've seen on gilts. There have been plenty of occasions when yields did get back above the 1,000-day moving average, but they never were sustained. And on this occasion, we are now finding support in the region of the 200-day moving average until it starts to roll over and pulls back below the 200-day moving average. We have to continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now, the Nasdaq rebounded quite impressively from the low in June through to the peak in August, and it's starting to roll over. The higher yields go, the greater the pressure that comes to bear on the levered portion of the market, particularly those types of companies that need access to cheap liquidity in order to fund growth. Well, liquidity is no longer cheap, and it's getting more expensive. And therefore, that kind of business model isn't going to be as productive or attractive as it has been in the past. And I reopened my short position in the Nasdaq 100 in here today, as well as taking out a lot, I guess it's a number of positions in long-dated out-of-the-money put options earlier on this week. I just think that we are not anywhere close to the end of the hiking cycle. And we've had a good-sized reversion to the mean, so there is ample scope for additional volatility. Now, some people are going to say that, well, golly, TIPS yields are back in positive territory. But let's just think about that for a moment. The TIPS yield is 0.4 of 1%. And the Fed funds rate is nearly 8 times higher than that. So, why would you own TIPS? Now, you might get at the principal adjusting over time. But what I found interesting is that TIPS were really attractive to investors during periods of deflation. During the sellout in 2008, TIP yields got up to 3%. So that was a nice buying opportunity at the time. But TIPS yields aren't keeping pace with inflation. And rising yields doesn't suggest a benign outcome. Then when we think about Treasury inflation protected securities, they're all now in positive territory. But we still have a really quite inverted yield curve. And we're seeing inverted yield curves proliferate. So the 10-year minus the 2-year is down to negative 33 basis points. And the 10-year minus the 3-month is also. Well, it was in positive territory today, but it's at 37 basis points. So that's an incredibly swift pace of contraction. But the more important point is that historically, the major selling pressure has occurred when the yield curve goes from inverted and up through zero and into positive territory. That's usually when stocks really tend to take fright. And we're not there yet. So people are, in many respects, willing to think that the Federal Reserve is just raising rates because they're worried about inflation. And when inflation dissipates, they'll just bring them back down again. But that's not generally how the Fed works. So they generally tighten and usually over-tighten, and then they have to cut rates because there's economic trouble. So it's when the trouble really becomes apparent that they start cutting rates. And that's why then stocks take fright and investors take flight during those types of conditions. And we're just not there yet. Now, we have the October 1st deadline for UK electricity prices, and there's going to be a lot of trading around that deadline. But then we have the additional deadline in November for when Europe puts full sanctions on Russia's oil. So Russia has been able to keep production up. In fact, they're back at the same production levels they were before the invasion. But Europe is going to stop buying their oil, and it's going to be more difficult for them to move that Urals oil east or out via other methods than it is to simply pump it into Europe. So that is contributing to volatility, and it's also likely to put upward pressure on oil prices. And oil prices being high are an additional tax on consumption, on top of the upward pressure we're already seeing on natural gas prices. I saw quite a few articles today talking about the fact that the VIX index is back below 20. But it's looking really rather oversold, and there's certainly potential here that it's going to start to pop back on the upside. If bond yields continue to march higher, then that's going to put upward pressure on volatility, but it's probably going to weigh on gold. So gold prices are a little bit overbought in the short term, having got all the way up to test the 1800 area. And this is a point of previous support and now potentially short-term resistance. So I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.